Hey everybody, Nick Naughton here, host of the Printcast. I wanted to give you a little background today before we get into our episode, which is episode 4 of the Printcast. My guests today are Andrew Myers and Joey Gross of the Public Print and Supply Co. in Kansas City. Now, I'm in LA now, and I've recently moved from Kansas City, so I know a lot of the print people in Kansas City. And so I wanted to talk to them about their journey into starting their own print shop here in the past like couple months. Joey is a veteran printer and has been printing for years, and Andrew is actually new to the scene, so he's learning as he goes. But they've partnered up and they've opened this little studio where they do screen printing and letterpress and foil stamping in Kansas City. I thought it'd be an interesting conversation, so we talked about what it's like to rebrand yourself, what it's like to open a studio, the trials and tribulations of doing such a thing as opening a new print shop in a city full of other print shops. If anything, you get some perspective on what it's like to start a print shop and what it's like to do that after you've already done that once before, what you go through, how you rebrand yourself, how you approach doing all the things that you have to do to get established quickly and get going and start getting work out of the place. So like I said, it's an insider's view on opening a shop. Hopefully it gives some perspective for anybody out there who's trying to start their own business. Starting a print shop is kind of like easy, but it's also very difficult, and it's a long road to getting to where you're sustainable and you have enough client base to make it your full-time thing. So without further ado, here's episode 4 of the Printcast with Public Print and Supply Co.
I've seen lots of paper come out of a press. There's still something about pulling that first print where it looks good, the ink's right, the impression's right. It still gives me chills to this day. And I've been doing this for, 8 or 9 years now.
I like that you can follow a few simple rules and make something utterly beautiful and analog and tangible.
This is the Printcast, the best podcast about printmaking ever made.
Letterpress is a survivor among technologies. It was invented 950 years ago in China and reinvented in Europe about 550 years ago. For centuries, it was an indispensable means of reproduction, ushering the developed world into a new era of shared knowledge. As one printer friend put it, it was the OG of social media. Letterpress today is used for many of the same purposes that we saw throughout history, like posters, stationery, invitations, and cards, and it thrives as a bespoke method of print for designers and artisans worldwide. It's not practical for everything anymore, but when deployed with intention and sensitivity, letterpress offers a tactile quality that is much appreciated in our digital world today. My guests today carry on in the timeless tradition of letterpress with their new endeavor, Public Print and Supply Co. in Kansas City, Missouri. With lots of experience under their belts, these two gentlemen in aprons are bringing yet another print studio to Kansas City, a city that thrives with a number of interesting print shops. We connect and discuss their new business, what it's like to start a shop from scratch, and how the printer's life can be rewarding, mundane, and challenging, to say the least. For those of us in the know, it's a lifestyle that raises the question, why am I doing this? And also, what else would I possibly do? Joey Gross and Andrew Myers, welcome to the Printcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, thanks for coming on the show tonight, guys. I appreciate it a lot.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to have you on because you're dealing with like a thing that's pretty common in the print world, but unique to those who haven't done it yet. You've just opened a new shop for yourselves, right?
We have. We're 3 months in.
How's it going so far over there?
I think it's going well, all things considered. We're busy. We have a lot of work coming in.
And it seems like a short 3 months.
Yeah.
But it also seems like it's been a really long time. But maybe that's just printing in general.
Well, I know it's a lot of work. I mean, so give me some background. Like, how did you put it all together? Like, where'd you get equipment from? Like, how did you go about it?
I think the two biggest hurdles were finding equipment and finding the right space. I think we could have probably operated out of a lot crappier situations. but we just stumbled upon this really nice little studio loft space in the West Bottoms of Kansas City, and kind of knew right away as soon as we walked in that it was probably going to be the best option. It was just move-in ready.
Kind of checked all the boxes we needed where we had some potential retail space, an office space, meeting space, and then a concrete pad with a garage door that we could move presses through.
The only thing it lacked was electrical, but I mean, I managed to kind of fumble my way through that on my own and get everything. No, it's probably not to code, but I mean, at least everything runs. And then, yeah, finding equipment. We just started digging. We got pretty lucky with a guy in Columbia, Missouri, who I've dealt with before, who we got a pretty good haul from. And then one press we got was right here in Kansas City that does the bulk of our production with foil and letterpress printing and all that.
So Joey, I know you for sure more because we've known each other over the years, but Andrew, you're new to me. So Andrew, where are you from? Like, where do you hail from? What's your background in?
I grew up in Indiana and met my wife in Virginia. And then we traveled across the country and settled in Denver for the last 5 years. And my background is in education, actually. I was an elementary school teacher, grades 3, 4, 5. I wasn't teaching any kids how to read or what numbers were, which was a weight off my shoulders. And the kids were still curious. So it was a pretty sweet time. And then my wife and I and our little boy moved here this last August. And Joey suckered me into printing.
So you were just like right place at the right time, and he was looking to make a move, and you just showed up.
Yeah, because it was a little late in the year, August. I wasn't gonna scrounge up a teaching job, and Joey had work. Yeah, so it was kind of right place, right time, and I needed a job to, you know, feed my family, which is important, I guess. So
minor details.
And Joey, like, so I know that you were working at JB Letterpress prior to doing Public. And then before that, when I first met you, you were running Survival Letterpress.
I mean, I had tried to start the printing thing a few times before I really figured out the direction I wanted it to go. And a lot of it was doing things out of my house. In college, I started like exposing my own polymer plates with space saver bags. So I'd vacuum seal the two sheets of transparency film together to make it dark enough, and then put that in the polymer in a bag and vacuum seal the air out. And then I used a homemade exposure unit to make my plates in my apartment in college, and had a little scrapbook press, like a cheap plastic scrapbooking machine. And I was pressing everything that way. So that's kind of where I got started. And from there, I just continued to gather equipment over time. If anybody really wants to know like how to find equipment, I have some really good tricks up my sleeve. All that to say, that led into what became Survival. And I finally got out of my house and garage and freezing winters where I was using heat guns to thaw ink to even be able to print anything, and found a studio in Mission, Kansas. And I feel like that's probably where I really got my footing in the industry and started to figure out what was really needed to make it functional and efficient and what wasn't really working. So that's just kind of a little backstory, I guess.
And so then you were running Survival with your wife at the time, or your ex-wife, I guess I should say.
You know, a big reason that ended up kind of just fading, the relationship obviously faded, referring to her as our ex, as my ex, but, and then the business ended up fading out with that too. It was just one of those things where it was just like kind of too much to tackle, you know, going through divorce and trying to keep a business afloat at the same time. I had to kind of throw in the towel and move on to the next thing.
Now, that would be difficult to peel it apart once it's running and you guys are doing it together like that. But then so then you did a brief stint for, I don't know, for what, a year or two at JB Letterpress?
Yeah, it was a little over 2 years. That's kind of where I ended up landing. I was working at a screen printing shop doing, I don't even know what you would call that, production art, maybe, where just a lot of file prep for getting stuff ready to go to press. I had been there for a little bit, which I actually learned a lot at that job about pre-press and getting files set up correctly and things like that. But yeah, I left that. JB ended up buying a lot of my equipment that I had at Survival. And so it was really appealing to me to kind of be able to follow that into another shop and, you know, you get used to equipment and how it runs and its quirks. And so being able to follow it and not have to relearn on new machinery was pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, it's almost ideal. You get to keep working on your equipment, but under a new situation and someone else is kind of overseeing the larger business aspect.
I just, you know, here's a paycheck. That felt really good.
Yeah, sometimes you need that. Yeah, you know, when I first met the folks over at GB, I don't know, like quite a few years ago, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. But what I've always been amazed at is like how, you know, when you talk to Brad, one of the owners of that company, he just refers to himself as like a machine operator. He doesn't even think of himself as a printer, but he's like a fountain of knowledge when it comes to like foil stamping and could basically do anything, fix anything, make anything work. You know, he can tell something's off just by sound. You know, I kind of learned a lot just kind of getting to know them and seeing the work that they did too. You know, they were making door hangers and tags for gym shorts by the millions. What I refer to as like meat and potato type of printing, you know, where it's just like somebody needs to make that kind of stuff and no one really knows who makes that stuff. It's just like you tear it off the piece of clothing you bought, but it's someone somewhere like foil stamped it, die cut it, designed it. And you were kind of working in like an epicenter of a shop that did that kind of work, you know?
Yeah. And actually when Andrew first moved here in August, that's where he went. He was there with me for
about 5 months.
5 months. Yeah. So that's kind of where he got his bearings and footing with a lot of the machinery.
I made the mistake of like, I didn't know what to call myself. Cause I was like a school teacher and that's pretty simple. But I was like, I don't know, like a letter press man, press operator. And Brad just started laughing at me and like, you're none of those things. Very clear that that was not me, that I just operated a machine, but which is kind of fun. You're right. They do a lot of large scale commercial work as well as small mom and pop print shop stuff, which we were on Kluge's and then C&P's and then hand feeding and then die cutting on a windmill. And it was really great experience to float around and get my hands dirty or just oily, really.
Yeah.
Really on all oily. Those machines.
Really oily.
It's common in like the whole print scene today that people say print isn't dead, you know? And like when I started printing all those years ago, print was like the dying art form. And we'd talk about it as we were in the shop, like making stuff, you know, for assignments and whatnot. But it occurred to me like in coming up in the lead up to this show that like, even when print was supposedly dying, I mean, not only was I learning about it and basically it became like the focus of the rest of my life, there were people like Brad and Jan in the background somewhere in a warehouse space somewhere in the country pumping out all that same stuff, you know? And I thought like, when did print ever die? You know, how did that concept even take form when it literally never ceased to be used and it was ongoing, you know, since the invention of it all those like centuries ago?
I'm not sure if it ever died or if it's just slowly dying.
I think, I don't know, maybe print dying or being dead was like kind of being referred to by artists who were wanting print to gain respect in like the art world. For all the years of art history, like print was kind of a subservient medium to like painting or sculpture. Like if you were a painter, you were like making like the important work. And if you made prints, they were just kind of there to go along with your painting work, you know?
I think a lot of that, I'll call it the print's not dead, isn't dead movement. There was a resurgence, I feel like, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago when the letterpress printing method kind of came back to life. And I think a lot of that just had to do with people really wanting to respect print as a craft again and not because, you know, handset type, all that phased out and digital offset and all that moved in. And I think it's just in our nature to want to appreciate like the intricacies behind what's actually happening. And I feel like letterpress was a really great way to do that with print because finally you could see the process really like coming to life from start to finish. And now it's even better because we can actually there's technology now that you can take digital artwork and convert it into a form where it can be put into a press that was made in the 1920s. And it's super easy to do that now. You know, magnesium plates and metal etchings have been around for a long time, but they're expensive. And now there's like this ease of photopolymer that kind of made letterpress, in my opinion, available to a lot of people. You don't have to have a graphic arts degree to really understand how to letterpress print, in my opinion. And I feel like the availability and the accessibility of that, I feel like is really appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been, you know, listening to interviews with people who do letterpress today and, you know, kind of learning. I mean, there's so many shops, you know, like, you know, this too, from looking around, it's like, what, Kansas City alone supports at least a half a dozen letterpress shops or something, maybe probably lots more, right? Like, and it all keeps going. Like, in a city of what, Kansas City is about 1 million people, which isn't like a very big city. And it feels kind of like a small town, big city, I feel like, you know, from living there over the years, but it somehow supports like a huge print scene that I think is kind of not quite as known, you know, nationwide. I don't think people know what's going on there or how favorable it is. Because you can find a space to rent, you know, that's actually quite affordable, that's actually really nice, and you're probably near some stuff that's like interesting or cool or like nice to be around, like, you know, other businesses and things like that, which is pretty rare today. Like in LA or big cities, like it'd be really hard to do the same thing, you know?
Right. And I mean, that's, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly where we ended up. Like, we're in a, like, I can't even imagine what the space we're in right now would cost in other cities. I feel like we'd be paying double,
at least
what we're paying here. And we're around cool stuff, and we're in a part of town that is
growing
and gaining life. So yeah, it's awesome.
So you said you guys are down in like the West Bottoms, right? For people who don't know Kansas City, the West Bottoms has been this kind of dormant part of the city, very close to downtown, but kind of down on the floodplain. And so for what, decades and decades, like no one really developed it because it was always the worry of it flooding yet again, you know, was a big impeding factor of why it never built out. But today, what, like the whole of the West Bottoms is being built, rebuilt, torn down, and new things going up, and everything's being remodeled. It's like a pretty exciting time to be down there, I bet, running your shop down there.
Yeah. I mean, we literally share a parking lot with lofts that we were told are $3,000 a month to live in.
There's a wine bar, a handful of cocktail bars, a handful of restaurants.
Yeah. We when we moved in, we were told there's like more apartments and lofts being built catty corner from us.
Yeah.
The Boulevardia Festival is right here where we're at. Like there is a lot happening. But yeah, you're right. For a long time, it was just an area where you just really didn't wander into. It was empty, just a bunch of warehouse spaces that had nothing in them. And now it's a completely different story.
But yeah, what's it like though, like starting like another shop? Like, you know, you had Survival and then you kind of took a break from running your own and you're starting a new one. Like, what's that journey like? And I know now you have a partner, you know, so it's probably a different thing too, where you have like two people kind of sharing the load of printing. And how do you guys split up the roles for what you guys are doing now?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that tonight, actually.
I think what was appealing for me, not having a lot of background or experience in print, Joey's ease and confidence is probably what drew me in. And then the accessibility as well, where, you know, I quickly found out that it isn't rocket science. And I think in your intro, you said that you have to be intentional and careful. And that's about what it is. And I think starting our own was just walking into that, being intentional with what we do and how we do and being careful with those things. But it was kind of a happily fortuitous marriage, if you will, because Joey has a lot of the experience, both hands-on on the press and as well as in front of the computer. And when we started discussing what it would look like for us to start a shop, we just started with, you know, what would be ideal for you? And Joey's like, well, I want to prep files. I want to design. And I said, well, I just want to stand in front of the press and make sure it's running. And so I think that kind of spurred us on and encouraged us where we could both fulfill roles that we wanted to fulfill while pursuing this together.
Has that been working out, like that type of division so far?
Yeah, I think it's worked out great. I thought maybe I would miss running the press a little bit more, but I'm realizing that I don't as much. I feel like I had my time with all that, and there's obviously still going to be time for me to be on a printing press. but it was like, it worked out really well. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand how a press operates. I feel like if you are really good at paying attention, you can print. And you have to have some mechanic, like you have to have some understanding of mechanics for sure. I mean, it is a machine. It's got a motor and there's a lot of moving parts. You just have to be careful. But yeah, I mean, what drew me to starting a business, especially with Andrew, is just having somebody that is super intentional, isn't afraid to jump into things, even if it's a little unknown to him, and really just willing to kind of take on whatever is thrown at him. And having a business partner like that is way more meaningful to me than having somebody that has 30 years of experience running a machine. And I could care less about that. I would just rather have somebody who is eager to learn and likes the idea of being a part of something that is a little bit bigger. That's where I feel like we've really thrived. And it's allowed time for me to really focus on kind of the brand development and more of the marketing side of the business, and kind of honing in on all of that stuff, which can be daunting. I think trying to start something alone, I feel like that's where I failed probably the most with survival. Was it was just too much for one person to try to take that all that on. And so having a business partner, and also we should probably mention we're in-laws.
Our wives, my wife and Joey's future wife, are sisters.
Yeah,
man. So yeah, you guys are definitely connected then. Don't mess it up.
they probably would have. Most people would probably say don't do that. Don't go into business with family. I mean, they tell you not to even do it with a friend, but I don't know if we can argue with each other and share like successes with each other. I feel like we'll be all right. Yeah.
You're listening to the Printcast, a podcast about a dying art form finding new life and the artists in the studio making it happen.
So I think when I first caught wind of Public opening, I think it was on Instagram, and you were just like, yeah, my feed's been dormant for a while. This is my new company. And I was wondering what that was like, you know, having to rebrand yourself. What are you doing to like establish this new identity?
That's a great question. I think the transition over worked out pretty well. I wasn't sure what like best practices were there really. Some people may have said start from scratch, but I looked at it as I have close to 2,000 followers from this account that I haven't used in, I don't know, 2.5 years. Why not just see what happens with it and see if I can continue to retain some of that? The social media game's hard enough already. If you've got a footing in it, I mean, why not take advantage of it? And I think from the time I kind of like closed Survival up to 3 months ago when Andrew and I launched Public, I had only lost 100 or so people during that like dormant time. And since kind of opening, I've already regained quite a few of those numbers back. So it wasn't like there was an outlash and people were confused. I tried to make it as clear as possible what was going on so people understood. I think it's just a matter of how you present yourself and the messaging behind something new happening like that. And I feel like the following I did have was loyal. And honestly, I think most people were pretty excited to see me coming back, especially with more intentionality than before. With I'm not just alone this time. I have like there's other people involved, which I think feels really good. And from a brand standpoint, it's probably one of the most, at least personally, I feel like it's a nightmare trying to come up with a brand for yourself.
Oh, totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, I think a lot of designers feel that way. And I would love to pass that off onto somebody else at some point at when we're ready to, if we have some money in the bank at some point to blow on a different logo, I would love to just hand that over and let somebody have fun with it. Cause I can't have fun with it. It's not a, not a fun thing really. And I don't know if you have, do you want to speak to that at all? But
no, I have no idea. And I have no interest in exposing myself to that task.
It's almost like an endless game of ping pong. It feels like you're constantly banging your head against the wall, trying to like, I mean, you can be your own worst critic with a lot of that stuff. And I feel like if you're designing, especially with brand identity, if you're working on that for somebody else, I don't know. It just feels a lot different for some reason. And it's hard to put your finger on. But yeah, it seems like a never-ending, impossible task almost.
But yeah, so besides that, like, how do you plan on expanding and like growing? Kansas City has lots of shops, you know, as we were talking about. I mean, but what do you do to grow now that you're starting out this new shop? Like, you know, is it just word of mouth still, or like, do you have other strategies in mind?
That's something that we've constantly been thinking about and brainstorming how to go about. Like, is it social media campaigns? Is it upping our activity on Instagram and Facebook? And what would it look like to, you know, pull some ads for all those avenues, Google? And we're kind of just on the front end of that and trying to navigate what's our best use of time and money and what would most likely lead us into some more work. And we're not sure yet.
Yeah. I mean, we're so early with this venture together. I feel like right now we're kind of in survival mode a little bit, where the work's coming in, which is great, but we're both like, I'm working a full-time job. Andrew is doing stay-at-home dad, which is a full-time job. And then we're coming here at night and working nights. I feel like right now it's just, we're trying to just scrape by a little bit. And I feel like we're starting to feel some relief a little bit.
Yeah.
Being 3 months in.
I'd say so. Our head's a little more above water than January, especially.
Yeah. We decided to launch probably in the slowest month for print.
Yeah, definitely.
And that was hard, just almost strictly from a financial standpoint. But yeah, and you know, we're constantly starting to have more and more conversations centered around how do we want this to evolve and what do we want it to look like. I think one of the ones we've had recently was, you know, we're kind of in this. We feel like there's a little bit of a spectrum of print, and where do we fall into that? And you have the big commercial shops like JB, and there's another one in Kansas City called Post Press, who, you know, they take it all. They crank out work. And then you have kind of the fine art side of printmaking too, which has a lot of merit in itself. And it's trying to figure out the balance and where we fall and what categories we fall into and who our target audiences should be in that. And I think over time, we'll continue to learn more about what this looks like and who we're catering to. You know, it's cool because we started and I retained a lot of customers. Some of them even go back 5 or 6 years with me. But right when we started, we gained new people that I didn't know, Andrew didn't know. It's just word of mouth. And we're getting, you know, it's crazy. We're getting emails often from people who hear about us through word of mouth, and we get referrals a lot. And so there's that side of it too that feels just like really organic to me. We're not paying for those people to go out and like talk about us. They're just, you know, it's just, we're trying to do good work here and hopefully it gets appreciated.
So like for the most part, you're talking about doing custom work for people. Like, are you guys planning anything on like a retail side?
I don't know. Joey always said that it's hard to sell paper. And and I always thought that that wasn't true. Just because I was the sucker, like, buying those greeting cards and postcards. But I think what I would like is to have a real retail space where we just are the servicing shop, where designers come in and kind of pitch their vision of what they want to produce. And we walk alongside them in that process and then are able to keep some of those in our shop. And if someone wants to walk in and purchase them, then great. I don't know. We haven't really talked too much about it, but I think that would be really rad where designers and artists can come in and not only learn about letterpress or printing and how we could put that on paper, but also giving them a space to sell their things.
Yeah. I think the retail game is difficult. I know we couldn't rely solely on that. The return you see on custom work is night and day compared to what you can see happening just from like a retail or wholesale perspective. I mean, when I had Survival, I stayed up multiple nights and tried to design a line of green cards. And then it was like a marathon to try to get them produced. I think I was trying to get to a show in Chicago to sell everything at. And I think if we were to get into that space, I'd want it to be more intentional. Maybe even having another designer like come on board and help us like with a retail line of our own. So I don't think it's out of the question. I know we probably don't have time to dabble in it right now. We've talked about going to NSS in New York, maybe even as early as trying to go next year. And with that comes a huge commitment, and you got to be invested in the retail game. So, yeah, I think we'll probably keep talking about it to see how we want that to look. Or it could just be a thing where we've got a website, I mean, and it has an e-commerce platform behind it. If we want to do like limited runs of greeting cards and sell them here and there, maybe that's our play. I don't know. We need to talk about that more.
It's funny. I remember now, like the first time I met you, Joey, we were at the Nelson Atkins Museum. And it was basically what, like an open house evening for like young hip people to come drink at the museum and like look at art and stuff. But they decided to have vendors. And so you and I had, of course, like signed up because, you know, someone offered it to us and we were like, sure. Yeah. And we probably had to pay to be there. I think like $100 or something. I don't know. But I remember sitting there all night and I didn't sell one thing all night. It was just like so boring. And I looked across and like, here's this other printer guy with a bunch of greeting cards also selling nothing. And then we just like sat at your table, just like talking shop like the rest of the night and didn't even like pay attention to anybody because it was, we kind of decided it was futile, I think, at that point.
I remember walking away from that and after meeting you, just thinking like, man, that guy gets it. I feel like he gets it. And I don't know if everybody understands this world, but I walked away feeling, I mean, obviously the situation sucked. We weren't selling anything. We weren't making any money, but at least I met somebody who was like felt like they were on my level a little
standing
bit.
Standing in solidarity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's hard. I think anyone who does like vending, like vendor events and craft fairs and things like would get it on a certain level, but it reminds me like when we were talking about, we did like a pregame conversation before this interview, like we were talking about just kind of like, I don't know, the dark side of the career that we chose being printer people and how it's not all like rosy, like picture setups that you put on your Instagram of like the thing that you carved and then, you know, your tools are sitting there and all the refuse is piled up neatly. And then here's like an image perfectly centered. And I feel like there's this, I don't know, romanticized view of like letterpress, especially letterpress and printing in general. And people, I don't think people understand the hardship that goes along with it or like, or the time that you spend at a vendor fair where you don't sell jack or, I mean, and frankly, what you put in a bunch of time and money on the front end of going into that event. So it's just like you're actually like running at a deficit and then nothing is panning out. And then you kind of sit there and you're wondering, like, why did I spend all that time? I didn't like sleep for 2 days and like it was for nothing. Like,
yeah, I mean, there is like a, I guess, a dark side or a challenging side to the industry. you know, we're working with old equipment, but it's even that is can be kind of like photo worthy at times, like the machinery that we're working on. I mean, nobody's posting videos of their desktop printer spitting out paper. And I think it can be like romanticized a little bit. Andrew and I might let him talk about that too. We were talking about the kind of the challenges of what we face. And yeah, you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, from my outside perspective, looking in, Joey's like, "Hey, you want to get into this?" It's like, "Yeah, that looks super sweet," and it's totally romanticized. There are those like beautiful days where things run well and they're perfectly square and centered, and your paper cutter back gauge isn't crooked, and and you walk out of the shop and feel like you're on top of the world, and then 99% of the time it's the other way where things aren't centered and things aren't squared. And but I think the ultimate romantic piece about it for me would be that it's intuitive and it's intentional, and that it's not square for this reason, and to fix your cutter's back gauge you need to do this, and the windmill operates this way, and if it's doing this then you have to change this. And I think that's what's romantic about it for me. It's all those highly intuitive and well-engineered pieces that are practical. And you can, I mean, for me, as an example, I'm not terribly artistic, but I like that you can follow a few simple rules and make something utterly beautiful and analog and tangible. But I think some of the challenges for us here at Public, just because Joey has so much experience both on the press and on the back end, I would say it's not necessarily putting ink on paper or foil on paper, but it's just the things that we were talking about earlier, like how do we market ourselves and what market do we want to get into and what does advertising look like and how can we solicit and scrounge up more work. And I think the business side is what has been daunting for me. And one of the bigger challenges.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of the things that can go wrong during the day when you're tired and you are just wanting the press to run right and it's not picking up paper or something breaks, you know, like there's a million things that can go wrong once we get into a job. I was just giving Andrew a quick rundown the other day. He's really starting to get into like the ink side of printing. We've both have experience with foil stamping, and I probably rattled off 10 things that you can look at that could go wrong in the matter of a few seconds, and you've ruined 50 sheets of paper. And the job is botched and you have to overnight more and it costs $300. So yeah, there's like that.
Not that that happened.
Not that that ever, it's never happened. It's happened to me plenty, but that's probably one of my horror stories. I forked over like $500 for overnight shipping one time. But there's like that side of it where, yeah, it's challenging. The craft itself has its challenges, but there's still something about pulling that first print where it looks good, the ink's right, the impression's right. It still gives me chills to this day. And I've been doing this for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years now. I've seen lots of paper come out of a press, but there's still something about this tangible piece of paper that has texture to it, feels good in your hand, and it just looks beautiful. Like, we are working on equipment that makes amazing pieces of art.
old equipment.
Old equipment.
That puts beautiful things on paper.
Yeah.
And where one hair matters.
Yeah. And then the other challenge I think Andrew and I both talked about is just the kind of communication breakdown between what we're doing in our shop and how that relays over to our customers. You know, we on our website and kind of like in our marketing stuff, we're really trying to like convey that we're here to help educate people on the process as much as we can. And we really do want our customers to be curious about what's going on, because if they're not, it can make things stressful on our end.
Yeah.
To some degree.
It's just another, I think contentious is a strong word, but if you have a designer that as Joey is saying, like that isn't curious, where he or she could care less about the process and all they need is this product. And we want to be that shop where those two things can come together, where the process is just as important as the product, where we are able to educate and walk them through and talk them through what it will look like to put this digital file and get it on a piece of paper.
I mean, I can only imagine the amount of people that are sitting at a computer that have no clue what's actually going into producing the thing that they're designing is probably really high. And we're hoping that we can start to bridge that gap a little bit. And we do think there's like a communication barrier between what we're doing and what's being designed. And it can create headaches all around and mistakes. And I mean, I know a lot of people probably don't know that if they send us a PDF, that PDF gets converted into a metal magnesium plate.
Yeah.
To get, and then that plate gets heated to 250 degrees and it gets hit with a press that has 50,000 pounds of pressure per square inch. And it spits out this delicate white little piece of paper at the end. Like that's in a nutshell, that's kind of what's happening. And I know that there's a lot of people that don't really probably know that's really what's going on.
No, yeah, you've said a lot of the right things there. Like, I think it helps to like work, you know, when you're making custom work for other people, it's like you're often just like the middleman sort of that like takes that design, makes it into something tangible, and then like you give it back to them and then it's done and your role is finished. But it's like it really helps when like the people you work for have some of that background knowledge and know, you know, the threshold of like how small the type should be, or if you're tapering a line, like how do you do that so that it doesn't like go wrong when you hit it with that pressure inside of that press. And yeah, there's so many things like that. Like you said, like, you know, ultimately like you want to educate the public, you want to educate your designers, and you want them to be curious too, because like, I think as you know, the more you know about the type of things that go on during the printing process, like, you can actually play with that when you're designing and like design in favorable ways for the process. And then get like even better results, you know, by making things that are, you know, foolproof or, you know, set up in a way that they're going to just work really well and go smoothly.
Yeah.
But it's hard, you know, it's hard to make that happen all the time.
And we, you know, we would never put expectations on people to be experts with us in this. Like, we're supposed to be the professionals here that,
yeah,
no. We know what we're doing, but you know, if we can bring people along even a little bit in the process, it helps. It even helps us out a lot too.
Yeah, I think it. I mean, it helps both parties involved. But I like the idea just because we get to share something that we like, and people that are curious, I think, like to hear those things. They like to hear what makes you tick, or what restaurants you like to go to, or what kind of coffee you like, or when you get to share those things, that shared interest not only creates like good business partners, but just a camaraderie and knowledge and friendship over this analog medium of putting ink on paper.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I have to say, from the standpoint now where I'm just like a full-time printer for a different company, you know, like I think I miss quite a bit, like that interaction with like the people I worked for. And it's weird because it's, you know, all that I was just making stuff. I'd make t-shirts and posters and, you know, business cards and whatnot. But like, there's this weird feeling where it's like, I feel like those people are family. Like when you've been printing for someone for like a number of years, it's just like, you know them, but it's like, you actually don't, like, you don't know them personally. You don't hang out with them maybe ever, or like randomly once in a while, you know, but it's like, there's some kind of bond that forms when you work together over a long period of time and you're making great stuff. And like, there's a mutual respect and it really is like a wonderful feeling, and everybody feels it. The people on the receiving end and on your end, being the maker, you know, it's just kind of all around. We're kind of coming close to time, but like, where can people find more about your work? Like what's your Instagram handle so people can look you up?
Public Print Supply is the handle.
And that's on Instagram. You're probably on Facebook too.
We are on Facebook. They can navigate their way to the website. Publicprint.co is another way to find us. I just added a page actually that has a bunch of like frequently asked questions and helpful tips. So a lot of that stuff that we just talked about, like educating, that's a big part of what we're doing. So yeah, it'd be great for people to check that part of it out.
Well, I'm sure they will. And I'm sure, you know, like you said, you guys are at the beginning of this new journey, but, I hope it works out well for you. I appreciate the both of you coming on the show tonight and just sharing like what you're going through, your experiences, and talking about, you know, your passion for this craft that we all love.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on. This has been fun.
Yeah, man, we really appreciate it. We're glad that you're doing this and getting the word about print out there.
It's been exciting. So thanks again. And thanks for making time and, you know, definitely keep in touch. Hey, everybody. Thanks again for checking out the Printcast today. This has been episode 4 with Public Print and Supply Co. in Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you again for checking out the show and for being super supportive. It's been a really great journey so far, and I've been getting a lot of great feedback and listens and sharing. So it's been a wonderful experience thus far. The Printcast was supported in part by Arts KC. I received a grant to help start the show. Voiceover is provided by Jim Birdsall. Music was provided by Jazzar, with a little interlude in the middle of the show from my nephew Henry Naughton, who has been creating music as he and his family travel across the world. Henry Naughton's got a YouTube channel. You should check that out. It's pretty cool. Check your feed in about 2 weeks. We'll have another episode dropping, and I'll keep opening up the world of printmaking to your listening ears. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.